This is Referee's World with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
Hello again and welcome to the Referee's World podcast. This is the monthly audio magazine which offers education and training for football referees of all levels. My name's Darren Cullum. I'm a level 5 referee affiliated with Somerset FA. And this is Richard Mellon, FA level 4 tutor, PGMLO assessor and level 4 coach and my mentor. Rich, good to see you again. Have I missed anything off that list of that long, industrious list of qualities that surround you?
Hi, Darren. You've been very thorough and it's a lot of detail there.
Game on. Anyway, welcome to the podcast. We're going to crack straight on with it today. Rich's Ramblings, which is something that we start at the beginning of every bite-sized podcast these days, and basically it's the case of Rich going out and about his duties two or three times a week doing football stuff that he does all over the southwest of England and beyond, in fact, and then just picks up on little things. So ramble away, Rich, what you got?
Recently I was doing some coaching when I had a day off from PGMOL. I had a day off from doing PGMOL duties.
Keep going, baby. I love this.
I had a day off from doing professional game match duties. So
You're going to get some jit for that.
Yeah, no doubt I will. But I ended up doing some coaching with one of the level four lads that I look after and trying to sort of progress his career for him. And we did a game. And after 10 minutes, I became sort of a little bit concerned about his use of the whistle. Now,
when you say his use of the whistle, not loud enough, too poor, no depth in it, no authority?
No. Frequency. How many times?
Oh, right, okay.
The amount of times he used the whistle. And
right.
I regard unnecessarily. Now, in the game, I fed this back to the referee at the end of the game. I said, how many free kicks do you think there were in the game? And he said, 20. I said, actually, 19. So it was a good guess from his part. I said, but how many times did you use the whistle during the game? How many times, with 19 free kicks in the game, how many times would you gauge the need to use the whistle?
Top of my head, I'd be inclined to say 19-ish. Give or take a few because of other random little things where you might want to pull the ball back or something or just get the attention of somebody. So,
Kick-off at goal scored.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the game itself, it was 3-1.
Yeah.
That was the scoreline. So maybe
for the goals and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, kicking off again. But on this occasion, the referee blew the whistle 53 times.
Really?
53.
53 times?
And I got irritated.
For the whole game?
Yeah. During the whole game, he blew the whistle 53 times. I got fed up after 10 minutes.
I don't know what's more sad is the fact that somebody's getting bored of the whistle or the fact that you were stood there counting it.
Well, when you're in the refereeing zone, you try to help these guys and you're looking at areas whereby their profile becomes, what can one say, a little bit raised for the wrong reasons. When a referee uses the whistle, it has to have value and it has to have impact. Now, after 10 minutes, the referee on this occasion, he had already cautioned a player for simulation after 5 minutes. Now, he'd put himself under a lot of pressure by applying a technical caution so early in the game. And whilst he turned around and said to me, well, the player agreed that he did simulate foul contact and agreed that it was a cautionable offence, I just thought, well, so early in the game, could you have managed it? Should you have managed it? But alarmingly, the amount of times he used the whistle, not necessarily peep, 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 but peep to stop the game, peep to start the game, peep to stop the game, peep to start the game. He was doing it at free kicks, players being injured, throw-ins, corner kicks. He was blowing the whistle for almost everything. He enjoyed blowing the whistle.
It can have an adverse effect, can't it? Because eventually, over a period of time, players will start to get irate with it. The crowd could potentially start to get irate. And if the game is not going in his preferred way, it could actually backfire on him every time he blows the whistle, couldn't
it? Well, the thing was, the mood of the game was quite nice. It did have its couple of moments where it got a little bit interesting. And
was it a local game in terms of a derby, or was it...
No, it was a team from Devon versus a team from Cornwall, and it was in the Peninsula League. And so it was a level 4 referee. And, you know, when you're looking to develop a referee's career, these things that we use as tools of the trade do become important. And that's why he's got to recognise the value of using the whistle at the right time and in the right tone, and things associated with that.
After a while, because he's used it that much, the danger is as well that people will just start to ignore the whistle and it will just go over their heads because it becomes part of the game.
I described it to him as white noise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, when a referee keeps blowing the whistle, it doesn't have effect. Mm. It doesn't have impact. And that's what I said to him. I said, try to use the whistle when it has impact and has the best effect. And consequently, you know, people will talk about referees that are anonymous and people don't know they're there. Yeah, okay, I can understand a little bit of that. But, you know, when a referee has to step up because the mood of the game changes and the temperature changes, that's when he's got to have impact with the whistle. And that's what I tried to sort of feed back to the referee. But 19 free kicks in the game, 4 goals, and he blew the whistle 53 times.
Wow.
We had to change his profile, and that's what we worked on since then.
From grassroots to the World Cup. This is the Referees World Podcast with Darren Cullum and Richard Mellon.
It's the Referees World Podcast with me, Darren Cullum, and Richard Mellon. Don't forget, if you are a new listener and you found us for the first time, welcome. I hope you're enjoying it. You can follow us on Twitter at Referees World. You can visit the website. You can listen back to previous episodes there at refereesworld.co.uk and like our Facebook page as well. Currently, we're hovering around 2,600 and something followers on Twitter. So
yes,
it's
we
looking
are.
Pretty good.
Mm.
So thank you very much for all those following, and they're coming in from all corners of the world. And if you want to get in touch with us, by the way, please do through the website, refereesworld.co.uk. Now, we'll move on to the crux of today's episode. First of all, let's read an email here from Brian Hamilton, who's come up with a question. It's always good to get your questions as well. He was referring to the cup final game, not the cup final, the was it the quarter final, fifth round FA Cup?
FA Cup.
Fifth round, was it?
Yeah, Preston versus Man United.
Preston versus Man United.
A couple of months
ago. It was
a
midweek game, and it was a pretty good game of football. But there was a goal scored, and there was some dispute as to whether or not Wayne Rooney was offside.
Yeah, I personally
go onto
never
YouTube
watched
and look
the
at the video if you don't know which goal I'm referring to.
That's what I did. I didn't actually watch the game myself, but when I saw Brian's tweet, because that's what it was, announced that we were going to do a podcast and ask people what they wanted us to discuss. And Brian Hamilton come up with, please describe to me why Wayne Rooney's goal was allowed. And so consequently, I had a look at it and I can see why it was allowed and I agree why.
And this is where he was stood in an offside position, but he was at an angle to the goalkeeper and he stepped back out of the way and let the ball carry on into
not,
the net, didn't
not
he?
Looking to get involved.
Mm.
He becomes passive. What else? You've got a description there, Dow, something of how they viewed Wayne Rooney's involvement or non-involvement, because that's what it became.
From memory, I'm going off memory now because I did see it. I watched the game and I watched the incident concerned. He was not in direct view, so he wasn't obstructing the keeper's view. So he wasn't affecting the or interfering with the game.
Yeah. That's exactly how it's described. The skill sets of an assistant referee are tested, especially at the Premiership level and those areas. Now,
that's quite advanced stuff to a certain degree.
Oh, very much.
Now, anybody that's at grassroots level, you know, we've all seen mistakes along the way. We've all done these mistakes. You would kind of expect to have seen that on a grassroots game, Sunday league game, Saturday league game, wouldn't you?
Yes, because the player setup is totally different from that of the professional game. And when you have Wayne Rooney involved, or a professional player involved, not just because it's Wayne Rooney, but when you have a player involved at that level, if he's becoming passive and not looking to get involved, then the consideration has to be not to flag, you know, as opposed to, let's say, let's come back down to grassroots level, whereas the player's mindset, they are aware of where the defenders are. Now, I know the Preston defenders, one or two did appeal. because they knew where Wayne Rooney was.
It was a very good decision, mind.
But the goalkeeper,
as well,
the goalkeeper was never ever conscious of Wayne Rooney's presence because he made a dive, he made an attempted save, and that sort of forms part of the jigsaw for the assistant referee, because the assistant referee's got to look at the position, he's got to look at where the ball has come from, he's got to look at the goalkeeper, he's got to look at so many different bits and pieces. He will be on the communication system talking to the referee, saying, waiting, red 10 is offside, passive, active, not sure. Now, all those messages in some format have to be sort of communicated, whereby the referee will say passive, not involved, or something that gives the assistant referee a clear message whether or not he will signal or not. And how they came to that decision of agreeing that Wayne Rooney was not involved was excellent, in my view.
I agree. I think it was a great decision when you consider where the assistant referee was, because from his ankle, there's no way that he would have known whether Wayne Rooney was further back than the referee, or actually closer to him and interfering.
Yeah, the goalkeeper is fixed on the ball, and he won't be aware of where his right fullback might be, who could be arguably covering the position of Wayne Rooney. So he's not looking at that. He's just focused on the ball and where the ball is coming from. And that's why it wasn't given offside at that level. But just to go back to sort of grassroots and let's say local county league stuff, then the expectation is that the flag, once it goes up because the decision is made, he's actively involved, because he is interfering with the line of vision, because the goalkeeper's aware of where the player is and he doesn't want that collision. So that's where that might come into play.
At that level as well, you've got the added pressure of visitors and guests watching the game that probably don't know the rules in the way they they'll be piping up, and that kind of puts the assistant referee under a little bit of extra pressure when they're all shouting, come on, he's offside, blatant.
Well, I mean, I don't know what the capacity at Preston North End's Deepdale Ground is, but there would have been a few thousand Preston fans putting the pressure on to put the flag, to get the flag up. But it's the skill sets of the assistant referee that shone through that evening. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, in some people's opinion, the flag didn't go up.
It was a very, very good decision. But as you've said and alluded to on several occasions so far, these are very well-trained professionals.
Very, very much. Very much so. You know,
that do this day in, day out, and they review it day in, day out. And they look at how they can be the best.
Study and train. I mean, and when you look at the, I mean, irrespective of what the media are saying about our match officials at the moment, we do have the best match officials in the world. If not all the best, we are amongst the best. There's no doubt about that. You know, it's well known.
This is the Referees World Podcast.
Brian, thank you very much for your question. If you have a question, then you can post it through the website refereesworld.co.uk or on Twitter. Now, something I just want to pick up on that you mentioned just then is the fact that we are under the spotlight, particularly at the moment. There seems to be a lot of it. I obviously don't want to press you too much in this because of your role within football, but there are a lot of referees getting a lot of stick unnecessarily from the media, from former referees, which,
yes,
from my point of view, and I can say this, and I'm quite happy to say this, I think it's wrong what they're doing. I think it's stirring up a hornet's nest unnecessarily.
I think the easiest way is ex-referees are like ex-smokers. You know, I think that arguably they shouldn't be allowed to voice their opinion, but that's my personal opinion. But they do because they've decided they want to talk to the media about it. I've got no problems with talking to the media, but constructively talk to the media about referee development. Whereas these guys who are out there, ex-referees, they're going out there and just doing it for the sake of slaughtering match officials' decisions.
If I was to take a guess, I would suggest they're doing this to highlight their own profiles, because they are probably on the circuit doing after dinner speaking, etc., and they're probably earning a wedge for doing that. So to enhance their presence, this sort of thing is what particularly high profile ones.
You might have a point there. You might have a point. Mm. But, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, these guys that are out there, ex-referees, they know the pressures that are on these Premiership Select Group referees, and that the dedication that these guys give, the skill sets they have, the psychology of refereeing...
That's what they should be talking about.
That's what they should be getting down to.
Absolutely.
But... arguably, that doesn't sell newspapers, or doesn't make a headline, and so consequently, they've gone into print just to sort of say, "Well, the referee's wrong." And you know, at the end of the day, we as Referees World, we look at how we develop our skill sets, and you know, I'll look at decision making relating to handball. Let's talk about handball at Liverpool a few weeks ago, whereby. In slow motion, we could see that the ball hit the player in the face, but his arm was close to his face, and the referee on that occasion thought the ball hit the arm. Now, that's a plausible situation because of his angle. Now, as with anything within refereeing, what we have to do is we have to strive to get the optimum view. Now, how do you get the optimum view? We've talked about left, and sometimes you can go no further left, but you have to come inside to keep the view, to keep the angle, so you can make an accurate judgment. And that's what we should be talking about. Don't go to the press and say, "Oh yeah, you're absolutely right. That was a horrendous decision by the referee." What's that about? For me, I think they're just there to gain a name for themselves, gain an article, but I have to be careful what I say.
No, absolutely. I wouldn't want to put you into any kind of position or situation there. But again, listening to a podcast like this, then people would actually be able to understand the pressures and the technologies and the psychology that goes into refereeing.
Oh, there's a lot of thought that has to be processed into decision making. Now, the skill sets of players obviously change the further up the ladder you go. Now, let's talk about the level four referees that we're working with at the moment. They are learning their trade. They're serving an apprenticeship, and they will serve an apprenticeship until they actually become a craftsman. And a craftsman sort of steps away from apprenticeship and becomes that expert when he gets to the Football League. That's the start of his professional career.
Yeah, but surely you never stop learning. Because every game is a new experience. You're only as good as your last game.
Yeah.
That's a well-known phrase that we've all heard time and time again. So that's when you really got to step it up. So you've got an extra apprenticeship to serve, haven't you?
Yeah, for me, it's like a lot of things in life. It's don't think about the last decision. Don't think about your last game. Think about the next decision and look to get it right. You know, don't dwindle on what you got wrong 5 minutes ago, last game or whatever it might be. Focus on what you need to get right for the next decision, because that could be the big decision. And that's how you should be approaching refereeing. And like I say, you know, the preparation that we have to do for all our referees, right from level sevens all the way through to the Football League, doesn't really change. But the intensity of it increases, the expectation increases. And so consequently, Football League referees are under pressure. And as you come down the ladder, down towards level fours, level fives, the pressure eases slightly, but the demands don't change. The demands are so immense upon referees, and referees are very, very proud people. They do not like getting things wrong. However, because they're human, and you know, and I'm not beating the drum about we're all human and we all make mistakes, but I'm just trying to sort of try to ask people to understand reasons. We're not given excuses about making mistakes. We don't want to make mistakes, but as life is, you know, that
we do.
We will. I'm afraid we will. You know, and we could lead on to the discussion about technology.
There's another can of worms we can open. Let's do that in another episode. Just very quickly, just one final point, Rich. We do talk about this every so often. At this stage, bearing in mind the date and time that we're recording this, which is sometime in February the 23rd, 2015. To date, bearing in mind we've got a couple of months left of the season, who do you think is having the best season so far, in your own personal view?
My own personal view. The profiles have change slightly. The games on TV have been hard and fast. Tough question, Darren. Tough question. I'm gonna pump for Mark Clattenburg.
He's a name.
I think Mark has had an exceptionally good season, consistently good. Yeah. But in saying that, I'd probably put the kiss of death on him.
The thing is, whenever somebody has a consistently good season and a consistently good run, the moment they make a few howlers, it's absolutely shone in bright lights, isn't it?
I don't want to sort of go back again and harp on about. Everybody will have a day in the office that they just don't want, you know, and whether or not it's any of our select group referees, Football League referees, level three referees, et cetera, et cetera. Nobody wants to go out there and make a mistake. Nobody intends to go out there and make a mistake. But for whatever reason, preparation might have not been as far as what it could have been. An illness might have still been there. Coughs, colds, splutters. You know,
so you don't know what's going on personally as well, do you? So.
No, of course not. Of course not. You know, and you know, like I say, no excuse, but some genuine reasons of why a referee might have a bad day at the office. And you know, nobody's exempt. Nobody's exempt.
This is Referees World. Listen online at refereesworld.co.uk or search iTunes for Referees World.